From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 22nd, 2024. Looking at the calendar, the Bucks have a couple of home games this week. Sunday, the Oklahoma Thunder's in town, followed by the Lakers on Tuesday. This week, Tuesday, was technically the first day of spring. Now, doesn't really feel like that today, but with spring comes Brewers baseball, and the home opener is just 11 days away. If you're looking for something a little different this weekend, it's WWE SmackDown at the Fiserv Forum, and back to reality a little bit, the Realtors Home and Garden Show at the State Fair. Now, this is something Wisconsinites are familiar with, beach erosion. In a drastic attempt to protect their beachfront homes, owners in Salisbury, Massachusetts invested $500,000 in a sand dune to defend their houses against the encroaching tides. After being completed just last week, the barrier, made of 14,000 tons of sand, lasted only 72 hours before it was completely washed away. They say a rising tide lifts all boats, but I guess that tide's got to go out sometime too. The billionaire boss of a South Korean construction giant is trying to encourage his workers to have more children. Every kid's going to get you $75,000, and you even get to keep the kid. In a medical first, a Toronto DNA testing firm claims to have the highest possible accuracy in determining your dog's breed. Now, I'm starting to doubt those claims because I found out that their tests recently determined that a human was actually 40% Alaskan Malamute, Shar Pei, and Labrador. I guess that company might just be barking up the wrong family tree. And finally, our funny headline of the week. Man banned from Buc-ee's for life after bringing service duck to the store. At the big table today, we have Art Rothschild, Kendall Bauer, Joel Dreesing, and looking back at this week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Jason, and what a good week it was. The NASDAQ up 2.9%, closing at the bell at 16,429, up 456 points for the week. The S&P up 117 points on the week, closing up 2.3% at 5,234. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, despite giving back 306 points on Friday, up 761 for the week, closing at the bell on Friday at 39,475, up 2%. For the year, NASDAQ up 9.6, the S&P up 10.1%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 5.3. You know, Art, pretty, I think, clear place to start this week with the Federal Reserve releasing more of the same on Wednesday. They met Tuesday, Wednesday to talk about the path forward for interest rates, and specifically the overnight rate that the Fed controls. Clearly, the market had not expected much in the way of change, and certainly more of the same is what we got. And yet, it was a pretty strong response Wednesday, Thursday, even a bit of a rally for the NASDAQ on Friday. Investors seem quite pleased with the lack of movement that we've seen from the Fed.
Yeah, it's almost like Chairman Powell is deliberately trying to be cooperative with the markets that have been rallying in anticipation of some certainty with respect to declining interest rates, declining short-term rates. And he didn't fail to deliver what they wanted to hear. I mean, they were rallying before, they were rallying after. Wednesday was the first time since 2021, I think, that all three major averages set records, you know, at the same time. That continued into Thursday. Today, as you indicated, we had a little setback. The interesting thing that, you know, the Fed is doing, I mean, inflation's come down, but it's not coming down as quickly as I think they would have liked to have seen. And in this meeting, they released their dot plots, which suggests that we're going to have three declines at some point in short-term interest rates yet this year. We haven't seen them yet. And Chairman Powell continues to insist that they're not going to reduce rates unless they see inflation coming down, and we are data dependent. So this is, again, a rally by the markets on continued speculation that we're going to continue to see drops in inflation. And the hope for lower interest rates, you got to be careful because those hopes could be dashed if we do see higher inflation, And if the economy continued to expand, so it's kind of it's confusing as to what, you know, could happen, or concerning to a certain extent. But I'm enjoying the ride, you know, no question.
Yeah, I think tough to be upset about where stocks are this year, tough to be upset about the strong returns we've had really the last 18 months. And, you know, so much of it, I think, has been kind of founded on this idea that, well, inflation is eventually going to come back to where it's supposed to be. The Fed's eventually going to be able to cut. And then, Kendall, we see kind of the world central banks all taking different paths here. You know, certainly you've got the Bank of Japan finally getting back to zero after 17 years of kind of not seeing an opportunity to raise rates and being negative for quite a while over that stretch. You've got Switzerland now raising rates, the first developed economy to raise rates. And then you've got other parts of the world that seem to be doing something drastically different to fight, you know, bouts of high inflation.
Yeah, and I think perfect example of that is take a look at what's going on in Turkey. Caught everybody by surprise with, you know, 500 basis point rate hike. So, you know, again, I think going back to, you know, the Fed and their path potential on rate cuts, I think some of it, you know, stock market, we all know, hates uncertainty. And I think them coming out with a similar kind of message and dot plot that we saw for the most part since last December or the latter half of last year, just kind of reassured markets that, hey, we're heading in the right direction. Inflation has come way back down from where we saw it in 2022. And more importantly, I think giving themselves some flexibility here to Art's point, in case the you know, the economy starts to heat up a little quick and we see inflation tick up. But to me, I think we're in a good place where, you know, people are getting bent out of shape over inflation being at 3.1 or 3.2% versus, you know, the 9% we were a couple of years ago.
And of course, if the path is lower for interest rates, it's going to change the math a little bit on, you know, where we as investors want to park money. You know, you look at the earnings yield on the S&P 500, somewhere around 4 2/3, maybe 4.75, depending on what you're using for a forward earnings number. But then if you compare that to the yield on a 10-year or even a 5-year U.S. Treasury at 4.3, well, that's a pretty favorable trade-off for bond investors to get a pretty competitive yield relative to what you're going to get on the earnings front on the S&P. And so I think it's a reminder that as rates come back down, yeah, perhaps it makes the stock market look that much more attractive again, at a point in time in which for a while bonds had really been the place, and even just cash had been the place to park money. And Kendall, one of the things that's going to be forced upon us as the Fed embarks upon these eventual cuts is, what do we do with all that cash that was sitting in money markets?
Yeah, I think investors have options, you know, and I think it was somewhere in the tune of $5.5, maybe $6 trillion sitting in money markets right now. You know, the Fed starts cutting rates, the yield on that money market may come down a little bit, and people may search for, you know, a new area of the market to try to earn a little bit better of return. You know, and maybe bonds are the recipient of some of that cash, maybe stocks are the recipient of some of that cash. But to be honest, I think, you know, if you're still earning, you know, a rate on your money market that's outpacing inflation, I think that also gives you another option, you know, when it comes to diversification. So I think, you know, we're in a position where, for the first time, you know, looking back at the last 10 years where bonds, you know, didn't really do a whole lot, rates were so low, you know, investors have a nice selection of things to consider as we move forward.
And of course, always a place for cash, especially if you know you're going to need it. And what better thing to be able to say than that the opportunity cost for holding that cash isn't all that great. You know, if your expectation for returns on stocks is 7 or 8% a year, which I think is pretty reasonable, maybe a little on the low side, and the alternative for now is 5 or 5.25 on a CD, well, you're not missing out on all that much. But it is going to change. The math is going to shift pretty significantly the further the Fed and other global central banks go on cutting rates. And that's one more tailwind potentially for stocks at a time in which, Art, we've seen a pretty meaningful rally already, seeing some broadening in that rally. It's no longer just a small number of names that are driving all the returns. And so perhaps a sign that there is a little bit of backing to the returns we've already seen.
Yeah, we never really know when we're going to hit some kind of an impediment to further gains, or even worse, have a correction. But corrections are normal. They happen every couple of years. We had one this past year that ended in October. We've been rallying the past 5 months, you know, since then. Let's hope it continues, but we don't know when it's going to end. Last year, the talk was of the Magnificent Seven. There were these seven stocks that were going up. If you didn't have them, you didn't make money. All our clients hopefully have them somewhere in their portfolios. This year, at least two of them have had problems, meaning Tesla and Apple. But this broadening, I think almost every sector, you've commented on this more than I have, in the S&P 500 other than real estate may be positive for the year. And I'm not that concerned about real estate. It makes sense that it isn't as positive because they've rallied before this year. And with higher interest rates, you'd expect real estate to have some, you know, problems. The global economy, because the dollar's been so strong, we haven't made as much overseas, you know, as perhaps we should be. So international diversification may be more beneficial going forward if things fall off here. So I like this market for being broadly diversified. You don't need to be focused only on the more aggressive, you know, Magnificent Five or whatever it is at this point.
Yeah, spot on, Art, that real estate's the only category, the only sector in the S&P 500 that's not positive for the year. And I think it's probably the most unique of the sectors in how broadly diverse real estate is. I mean, really, it's a whole nother asset class. It just happens to be that stocks that fall into that category all get labeled in the real estate sector. But when you consider, you know, the vast differences between a senior living facility that trades publicly and maybe a commercial property or a self-storage property that trade publicly, these are all drastically different businesses, drastically different economic forces. And so to your point, no surprise that, you know, there's going to be some part of that that isn't working. And if it's a big enough part, commercial property specifically right now, yeah, I'm not surprised that it's not had the positive year that the rest of the market's had. And yet, you know, Kendall, when you look at stocks broadly, again, I think plenty to think that, you know, this market breadth that we've seen is a positive sign overall.
Yeah, I think anytime you see, you know, more than just seven companies doing well, it's a sign to be kind of optimistic. And again, I think in many ways, I think it's a bit of a good thing, you know, to see some of the, and this may sound a little counterintuitive, but to see some of the Magnificent Seven give some of those earnings back, you know, to say, hey, okay, these companies are actually human, so to speak, right? Some of the rallies that they went on over the last year and a half were nothing short of remarkable. So I think healthy, and sometimes that's a tough concept for investors or clients to absorb, is, you know, every now and then seeing things pull back, like Art mentioned, or even simply level off, is actually a good thing long term. Valuations can get ahead of themselves. You know, there might be a company or two out there that we all know that, you know, create semiconductors that are on a historic rally right now. But again, encouraged by seeing other parts of the market come in and, you know, and rally year to date.
Joel, a pretty quiet week overall for economic indicators, but some data on the housing market that continues to show signs of relative stability.
Kyle, I think housing is a really good indication of how strong the economy is underlying. Even though the Fed has increased interest rates, as we were discussing, to slow down the economy, to slow down inflation. Yeah, housing is making a comeback, even with those higher mortgage rates. We had numbers this week on housing starts and building permits. And within that, there are numbers on the number of houses under construction, and it's been hovering around record levels. And these are records that go back to 1970. So that's pretty dramatic. Also, the number of completions have just reached the point that we haven't seen since 2007, so it's been since before the Great Recession. So, and you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, you think of the Great Recession, the housing crisis, and what happened after that, and a lot of building companies, a lot of builders, just sort of said, okay, that's enough. I can't afford to do this anymore. And individuals themselves went off and found different trades or different ways of making a living. I looked at, after you and I were talking about that, I looked at the numbers. We had 7.7 million people in construction employment in January of 2007. It's up to 8.2 million now. It didn't get back to that 7.7 million until in January of 2021, in May of 2020, I'm sorry, May of 2022, so relatively recently. And that was when the interest rates were still going up. That's when the Fed, just, you know, a couple of months after the Fed started raising interest rates. So we had a report today from the Conference Board on leading economic indicators. One of the things that they cited in there that's making that index go higher is residential real estate. That housing is actually kind of a bright spot in some of this stuff. At the same time, it's still below where it was. I mean, the National Association of Realtors came out with their numbers on existing home sales, and it's still, you know, way below it, what it's been the last couple of years. But there are signs of hope there.
Yeah, and again, as I've been saying for months, this is the time of year in which if we're going to see some more improvement on housing turnover, on more home sales, on you know, some of these completed houses getting filled, this is the time of year in which you start to see it. And so I think the housing data is going to be critical as we come through April, May, you know, early summer even, in terms of what that really means for economic growth in the early part of this year, what it really means for kind of the strength of our economy overall, because that household formation, that housing market growth in general is kind of a precursor to some of the other spending we look at. And so if we're going to continue to see the stability, it's nice that, you know, we're seeing some of it in the housing market now. The hope, of course, is that, you know, it leads to some of the other stuff down the road, which, you know, to your point, the survey of leading economic indicators kind of points to, here's something that's relevant for where we think this is headed. You know, I think the most important thing that we can point out is that despite what has been a pretty meaningful rally so far this year, it isn't founded strictly on, you know, on hopes and dreams. It's been founded largely on higher earnings growth. It's been founded on stronger profit margins. Founded on this idea that, you know, there are some things supporting both near term, and then, you know, when you consider some of the super trends or mega trends that are out there with technological shift, healthcare improvements, some of the wealth transfer things we've talked about, these are all forces that drive kind of the long-term earnings ability of stocks within our country, but also more broadly. And so, you know, it's tempting to say, well, we're up another 2.5%, 3% this week, depending on where you're looking. We might as well just sell it all now, pack it in, and go home. Well, but remember that, you know, the longer you assume that you're right about when the next shoe is going to drop, the more you're going to miss out on the potential upside. And so we really are in this for the long haul when we talk about investing in stocks. We really are in this for the opportunity set beyond tomorrow. And so I think critical that as we look ahead, yeah, there's going to be plenty of bumps along the way, but, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to be excited about as well. With that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.